He's in both Racine and Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Welcome you to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Stage of the Racine Theater Guild right now is a bright and energetic production of one of the happiest musicals before the public today, one of the happiest and most popular, Mamma Mia, based, of course, on the many hit songs of the group ABBA. And the Racine Theater Guild began to mount Mamma Mia 2 years ago in the spring of 2020, and just a couple of rehearsals into the process, the curtain came down, and of course it was COVID that ended that undertaking. 2 long years later, Mamma Mia is finally back on the stage of the Theater Guild, and they opened last weekend to rapturous standing ovations from nearly standing-only crowds, and 3 more weekends stretch ahead for the talented cast and the very capable crew of Mamma Mia. With us in the studios of WGTD for this first part of the morning show today, Doug Instanis, who is, of course, the managing and artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild and the director, the stage director of Mamma Mia, and Elise Sparks, who is about to become a senior at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and she has undertaken the role of Sophie, the young woman in Mamma Mia, who is about to get married and is trying to figure out who her father is. And I'm so glad we can have this conversation, and we'll be extending the conversation about Mamma Mia a little further into the hour. But in the meantime, Doug Instanis, Elise Sparks, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Hi.
Glad that you can be here. So, Doug, maybe you can fill in a few details in terms of that preliminary curtain coming down back in the spring of 2020. First of all, maybe say a word about Mamma Mia just showing up in that season. I mean, the anticipation that surrounded that and so on. And then, of course, what caused it to come to such a rude, premature end.
I think Mamma Mia was the cornerstone of our season. We were all excited about it, and people were buying season tickets, and some of the performances had already started to sell out, and even before we even started rehearsal, oh, we can't wait to see Mamma Mia. I saw it. Everybody seems to have a Mamma Mia story. Well, I saw it here, or I saw it there, or I saw ABBA, you know, when I was, you know, this age or that age. So there was a lot of excitement, and we had so many people audition, and had an excellent cast all ready to go. I think you had a couple individual music rehearsals. Mm-hmm. We had a group rehearsal, and we all were discussing, well, this, we were getting into masks and, you know, how were we going to rehearse? And then, well, we're shut down. And I tell you, the disappointment on that, and, you know, I think I probably lied to the cast two or three times. Okay, we're going to do it in August then. So just everybody stand by. And, well, no, we're not going to do it in August. We're going to try to do it in December or, you know. And then I kept out surveys. Are you available on this date? Are you available on this date? And we just kept postponing. And finally it was like, this is ridiculous. We're just going to have to shut down and start again. So it was very disappointing and very confusing for the cast and crew. And I was so grateful that so many of the cast hung out. 2 years is a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things change in people's lives. They, you know, move away. They have different jobs. They become a senior in college or, you know. So, you know, matter of fact, Andrew, who plays her fiancé in this, moved to Madison and then has moved back. So, you know, he was just, well, let's just see. You know, everybody was putting on a hold because everybody wanted to do the show so badly. So it was very disappointing for the cast and crew and for the audience, but I tell you, the first weekend we're up and running, and hopefully we've all forgotten the pain and suffering that the last 2 years have endured.
What are we talking about in terms of the proportion of cast from 2020 versus those that have returned now in 2022? I mean, I know it's the vast majority.
Right. I think there was 20 people returned and 7 that did not. I think off the top of my head, I should have done the math. But it was some, you know, the vast majority of people decided to come back. And so that was nice.
Elise, we're going to learn a little more about you in just a moment. But I want to first just zero in on the spring of 2020. First of all, I assume you were really, really excited to be cast in the role of Sophie and excited to be part of this production. And I'm trying to remember, is this your first time in a production at the Theater Guild?
This is my first Theater Guild production. It is.
So what do you remember about that spring of 2020 and as, for instance, the whole cast gathered together for the first time for as it turned out, it's one and only rehearsal. Do you remember fear in the air that this was not going to go through? Or at that point, did we still not know enough about COVID to understand what was coming?
I think I remember one of the first rehearsals, like maybe we were all just getting the scripts or something, all of us sitting in the lobby of the Theater Guild and like recognizing a couple people I was like had gone to high school with or I'd seen in other productions, and everyone else like introducing themselves to those they didn't know. And none of us knew enough about like what was going to happen. We just knew, oh, there's this thing everyone's heard about. Maybe it'll blow over. Maybe it'll pass us. It didn't, but
yeah. So what do you remember about, was it a phone call or an email you received with the news that this was shutting down?
I think it was an email that the Guild has decided to postpone, like, the season because everything around us was shutting down, so the Guild followed suit, like, for everyone to stay safe. And my first thought was, well, I guess I'm going to have to audition for a different Theater Guild show in the future.
You were afraid this might just evaporate altogether.
I was, because there was so much uncertainty. No one really knew anything, and it was just kind of day by day learning as we go, seeing what would come next, and that was the same with this production.
Right. Doug, do you remember feeling comparable? I mean, I suspect that you talked to enough of your counterparts in other theaters that you probably had a better sense than the general public did about the seriousness of what was coming.
Well, yes and no, because we all were looking at other theaters and they're postponing. And then the Guthrie Theater postponed for like a year and a half. And we're going, well, that's ridiculous. Mm. That's just overkill, you know. And then, matter of fact, they were short too. And so they, for some reason, they knew more than the rest of us because everybody else was going, okay, well, we'll postpone and we'll redo this in the summer. We just thought, within 3 months, certainly this is going to pass, and we'll be back and running that. And unfortunately, it wasn't. And so it was very, very hard to plan. And it's still hard to plan because cases are on the rise. I know Carthage, I know Parkside, the Milwaukee Rep, the Sunset Playhouse all recently had to cancel performances because of the increase in COVID. They didn't have enough understudies, and they couldn't keep their people safe. So we're not out of this yet. So we want to be past that. We think we're past that. But in reality, we're still have to be very careful.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, we're speaking with Doug Instanis and Elise Sparks about the Racine Theater Guild's production of Mamma Mia. And as we've just been talking about, This was a production originally scheduled for the spring of 2020. And after one group rehearsal and a couple of individual coachings, it shut down. I mean, it initially postponed, and ultimately that production had to be essentially canceled. And that whole following season was completely canceled. The stage of the Racine Theater Guild was essentially dark. This current season was when the Theater Guild began coming back to life, and this final production of this regular season is a mighty nice way to celebrate. So just remind us, Doug, this current season did not begin in the fall when it usually does. Began a little bit later than that, again, because of COVID.
We started in December, and we tried to do smaller shows. And we said, well, certainly by May, we can do a big show. So that's why we decided that hopefully by the end of the season, we'd be able to go back to business as usual. We're not quite there yet, but so far so good. We've been able to mostly be business as usual. But we started off with smaller shows, Christmas Story, Guys on Ice, Nonsense, you know, smaller shows. And so far they've gone very well.
Mm. So tell us, Doug, a little bit about the background of this show, Mamma Mia. I've already mentioned the fact that it's based on the many hit songs of the group ABBA. I should know more about ABBA than I do. I know they're Scandinavian, and I remember Dancing Queen when that first came on the radio 1,000 years ago. But otherwise, you'll have to educate me a little bit on ABBA and Mamma Mia.
Well, I know they're Swedish because my son played volleyball in Sweden, and when we were there, we got to go to Stockholm and go to the ABBA Museum.
Whoa.
They actually have their own museum, and we waited 2 hours in line to go to ABBA Museum.
Wow.
So this is a popular group. This is a group that everybody knows and loves. And I tell you, the museum's interactive and fun, and I think people will be surprised on how many songs they really, really know. To be honest, I didn't know they were Swedish because, you know, they sing in English.
And pretty well, too.
And pretty well, too. So anyway, it's you know, this show has been huge on Broadway. Two movies. Everybody has memories of when they saw it and what they like and what their favorite song is. And, you know, do you like the movie better than the play? And, you know, what about movie one compared to movie two? And it's just, I don't know. It's just, it seems to be cross-generational. As I was telling you earlier, I had this, you know, probably a 85-year-old woman with a walker going through the lobby saying, this is such a great show. I'm going to try to get my girlfriend to take me next weekend. And then we have young kids there that with their families that are singing and dancing. So this production kind of just crosses all age groups. And young, old, everybody seems to love the music. You know, the story, we kind of zip through the story as quickly as we can so we can get right to the songs. You know, the whole story of we don't know who the dad is, you know, is probably not the best story for a musical. But it's sweet and it's touching. And the moments between Sophie and Donna, mother and daughter, are wonderful. And Sophie and the dads, Sophie and her fiancé. There's some very touching, sweet moments when, you know, I'm a parent and my kids are going off. And when Donna sings about, you know, slipping through my fingers, it's for any parent, you're just going to weep because it's such a sweet thing. And Sophie has dreams and she wants to go see the world. And so there's a lot of wonderful, wonderful moments in the show. Even though the whole premise is she slept with three guys and we don't know who the dad is.
Right.
We'll just zip through that part real quickly.
Right. It's not Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's not Oklahoma,
story,
yeah.
That's for sure. But yeah, it's actually it's a very striking story and a very modern story.
Mm-hmm.
And it obviously is resonating with a whole lot of people. Elise Sparks, what did you know about Mamma Mia before you auditioned for the show back in 2020?
I was a huge fan of the movie. I still am. It's one of my favorite movies. I watch it with my mom as often as I can get her to. But I knew there was a musical. I didn't realize how different it was from the movie. Because it's like Mamma Mia, the movies, there's one and two, and there's different songs in each. And the musical has a lot of songs from movies one and two, which was really interesting to me, hearing how many songs they fit into the show.
Hmm.
So I like knew the storyline. I knew the three dads and Sophie and Skye. But the musical sets it up a little bit different. So it's been really, really cool learning it as we perform it.
By the way, remind me, who plays your character in the movie?
Amanda Seyfried? Mm-hmm. Seyfried? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So explain to our listeners a little more about the character of Sophie. I mean, not just the situation she finds herself in, but what kind of a young woman she is.
So Sophie, she has a lot of moments where she's very much like her mom, but she's also very much her own person. She's 20, she's engaged, she's bright-eyed and bushy-tailed about everything. She has an idea and she goes for it, like inviting the three dads. She's like, I'm going to invite them to my wedding and I'm going to know which one it is, which one's my dad. She doesn't. So chaos ensues. But she's very headstrong. She takes after Donna quite a bit, and Brianna Van Caster, who plays Donna, I've taken a lot from her, like, in developing Sophie, which has been really, really helpful.
In other words, you want your Sophie to be a reflection of Donna, your mother in the show.
Yes.
So Brianna's character, you want there to be a sense that this really is mother and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've achieved that. I think that's great. So what have been kind of the biggest challenges for you, and maybe that's part of it, in terms of kind of getting in touch with Sophie and making this work for you?
There have been a couple of challenges. It's overall, the process has been really easy, especially with the cast and crew. They all make it so fun and so easy to be there. But one of the challenges was vocally. This has never been my strong suit, all this mixed belt type singing. I didn't really start touching on that until this past year with a couple of voice teachers from school. So building that range and stretching that range and seeing what I could do with it has definitely been interesting to learn. And it's been interesting trying to build the character of Sophie. Our choreographer, Mary Lee, has commented she's seen this character, Sophie, as really shallow in past productions. And I'm grateful for the compliment that she's given me, that I'm bringing a lot of life and a lot of depth into this character, which is what I was going for, trying to make her a person.
Fantastic and vibrant, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's also a reflection of who her mother, Donna, is in the show. Tell our listeners more about Donna and what makes her such a distinctive character. I mean, what she has experienced in her life, what she has accomplished that that allows her to be the woman that she is as these events unfold.
So in the show, there's a very small moment in the song Slipping Through My Fingers where Donna reveals that she was like an unmarried pregnant mother. So her mom disowned her. So she wasn't able to go back home. She didn't have a support system. And it's touched on a little bit more that when she moves to the island, she stays with an older woman on the mainland, which is the great aunt, I think, of one of the dads. So she really had to make her own way in the world. She had relations with these three men, and like moving forward from that, she had to become her own person. In the time period, 1979 is one of my lines is that's the year she got pregnant with me. In that time period, she didn't have as many like options or resources as there are nowadays, like in modern times. So she really became her own strong person and persevered, really. And I think that's what lends itself to how strong of a character Donna is.
And Sophie, of course, appreciates that probably more and more and emulates her in some respect. And there you go. So tell us more about this quandary about the three men who each, any one of which could potentially be your dad.
So Sam Carmichael, Bill Austin, and Harry Bright, those are the three men that could potentially be Sophie's father. And there are little interactions in some of the songs. Like there's a, like, we call it Megamix Part 1. The three songs, Super Trooper, Gimme Gimme, Name of the Game, and Voulez-Vous. That's the first big stretch of songs at the end of Act 1. And Sophie has little interactions with all three of the dads. She seeks them out in the middle of like her bachelorette party, in the middle of all of this dancing. And she's trying to get more insight, get more information on who her father could be. Because her plan was, I'll know my dad as soon as I see him. And if not, then I've got 24 hours to figure it out. So she's kind of going on this quick little adventure, trying to sort out who her father could be. And I think there's some of the three of them in her, which makes it more difficult.
Right, exactly. And that you have three talented guys who are playing those three potential fathers.
Yeah, the guys are great. You know, it's the character development is kind of hard for the three guys. They've got a little bit to explore, you know, their history, and then we have song. And I think, you know, as we talked about Sophie's character, be underwritten and could be kind of, you know, shallow. The guys have to struggle against that too. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the songs at least give them some character, some life, some personality of what they do. You know, one's a banker, one is an outdoor guy, and one's an architect. And why do we like these people? Why do we love them? What made Donna be attracted to them, and what do they bring to the story? And all the guys do a really nice job of doing that and having interactions. And partly because, and again, if I can just give Elise some, you know, Elise is very good at reaching out to people and connecting with them. And all those scenes with the guys, you know, she doesn't know these old guys. You know, as a community, these are community theater people. She's an actress in college. And yet, here, reach out. That could be your dad. You know, put your arm on him, hug them, you know, connect with them. And it's not an easy chore. And I think that's where the difference in some productions. I mean, you have actors that can connect with each other and really look at them and react to what they're doing. There's a chemistry there that I think in some productions don't have. But our Sophie seems to be able to reach out to all the dads and the moms, you know, and her mom. And I think that's what makes it special. When we look at these guys through her eyes and we see how she feels about them, that she likes them, and that and I think that really helps the production and gives depth to those characters. So even though they don't have a lot of dialogue, they come in there, introduce themselves, get room keys, and boom, we're on to different songs. I think what makes our production special is how she interacts with the three guys and makes them welcome, and I think the audience will like them.
You're touching on one facet of this production, which is that unlike My Fair Lady or Oklahoma or whatever, this is what we call a jukebox musical, in which you have a whole bunch of songs plugged into a story, and songs that were not written for that story at all. So the story is written in order to be slots for these songs, and there are so many songs. It's wall-to-wall music. And so what you're left then in terms of dialogue, which is usually where we really get to know characters, there's actually relatively little of that. And so it is incumbent on the actors themselves to bring humanity to these characters that where there isn't a whole lot on the page that supplies that.
Yeah, the songs don't add much to the story. They talk about feelings and energy, but they don't tell you any exposition, really. It's just more of a feeling. But some of the songs, yeah, some of the songs were like, we've got three left over, let's put one in here. But there are a number of them that are really good as far as, you know, the Sophie songs in the beginning and the end when she's saying goodbye to people, and when her and her mom are having a beautiful moment when they're getting dressed ready for the wedding. It's just gorgeous when Bob and Harry and Donna reminisce about times gone by. Perfect. You know, some of those songs are just perfect for that moment. Some of them are, let's put them in curtain call because we like these songs and let's sing three of them before we, you know.
Right.
I do need to warn people, this is the longest curtain call in the Racine Theater Guild history. All the great songs that we didn't get into the musical, they put into the end.
Well, plus a song or two that we repeat at part of the curtain calls, but it's all tremendous fun and so much energy. Doug, what has technically been the biggest challenge in finishing up this production and getting it ready to present to the public? And I know that one of the challenges was the matter of COVID that intruded on the proceedings a bit.
Yeah, I think two things that really stood out was the fear of COVID and the fact that we went from relaxing our policies to tightening them down again. And that all of a sudden, more and more people, cast and crew, including myself, got COVID, even though we thought we were being careful. And then that fear of, for 2 years we've been trying to do this show, you know, and we're still worried about that, even though the first weekend. So I think that was kind of an overriding difference. And I think that the major difference with this show compared to any other musical that I've directed is the amount of offstage background vocals. I'm not a big fan of that. I've never been a fan of background vocals, and partly because we use a recorded track.
Well, and just to clarify, because I know you and I had a conversation, what you're really talking about is you're not a big fan of offstage
singing.
Voices, right. Offstage singing. Because lots of times you'll have Curly and there's cowhands behind him. And, you know, so that's background singing.
Sure.
But you're talking about singers off the stage singing and trying to be heard and trying to stay together. And, yeah, nobody really enjoys that.
Where they make a big, strong statement and it's coming over speakers.
Right.
And especially with a recorded track, everybody thinks, well, it's just lip syncing. They're just, you know, recording that. And it doesn't lend itself to the live band, the live performers, and it kind of downplays the quality of the performers. And, you know, you can't hear backstage, and you have to have microphones, and you can't blend soprano, alto, tenor, bass. So I don't like it at all. And so I've always found reasons to have people wander on or to be in tableaus, and artistically have had them on stage, except for Mamma Mia, because there's every song, as you know, has some background vocals. And so we made a decision pretty early on that we're going to go into a studio, record our singers, and then put those voices in instead of any pre, you know, you can buy a soundtrack, but we don't want to do that. It's our people, and they sing well, and we want to highlight their talents. So I think that was the hardest part, is just to figure out how long that's going to take and go into a recording studio and make those soundtracks and then have them blend with the live audience members.
And we should clarify that there are plenty of songs in which the ensemble is right on the stage singing live.
Right.
It's just those songs, and there's a few of them where they there's no reason for them to be on stage at all. They're not supposed to be on stage. Right. And yet they're supposed to be singing, providing the background vocals, and so this is the best way to do it.
A lot of big dance numbers with everybody's singing and blasting away.
Mm-hmm.
It's just when someone's having a solo, 30 people standing behind them singing harmony is not
right.
It steals focus.
Right, and robs those moments of maybe their intimacy and other things. Well, it's all come together really great, and of course you had near-capacity audiences this past weekend, the first weekend, and that's not usually the way it works. I mean, maybe with a really popular musical, but typically it sort of takes a little while
word of mouth. Right.
But in this case, word of mouth was already on fire, and so you had huge crowds and very enthusiastic crowds.
Yes, everybody's having a great time.
Yeah. Elise, what would be one or two of your favorite moments from the show? I mean, favorite songs.
There are a lot I have because... Well, everyone's so good. It's hard not to have so many favorite moments. I really like, there's a song Donna and Sam, one of the dads, sings, SOS. That's just one of my favorite songs, period. And so hearing them be able to perform that, I really like it. I really like Name of the Game.
Mm.
I did not like that song as much coming in, but like being able to sing it and like work it and... There's a lot more discoveries I was able to make in the song than I thought I was going to, so that's a really good one. And in Slipping Through My Fingers, there's a little conversation between Donna and Sophie, and Brianna and I always look at each other at one moment, and we're both tearing up. I always walk off the stage after that scene, like a little tear rolling down my head.
Wow.
So that is one of my favorites, because it
I love it when you say, "I'm so proud of you, Mom."
Sorry,
I'm just getting all over a clutch. Just repeating that line because you do it so well. You look at her and she looks at you and it's like, oh.
I always feel my voice cracking a little bit. And I'm like, we've got to hold it together one more line. I'm like, I'm so proud of you, Mom. I have to run off right away.
Yeah, at least you get to go off stage. Brianna's got to stay there.
She has a whole nother song.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting when you think about at least some of the songs of ABBA, it's easy to think of them as just, you know, a disco ball and all kind of light and flashy, but not necessarily songs with great emotional depth.
Mm.
And some of them have tremendous depth.
They do. Yeah.
And also the way they are attached to this particular story, it really has enormous impact. It's just incredible.
One of the first songs, Honey, Honey, there's a lot more exposition in that song than I realized, because there's a lot of little breaks in between the music. Like, it's Sophie and her two friends, Allie and Lisa, that, are her bridesmaids and coming for her wedding. And they're all talking about, like, Sophie found her mom's diary, and she's reading about these three dads. And that's gotten to be one of my favorite moments, too. Like, being able to interact with the two girls that play the friends.
Oh, you're a great trio. Yeah, that's terrific. How about you, Doug? I'm just going to let you have one.
Well, I already gave you mine. I love, you know, when she says, "Will you give me away?" And when she's getting in her wedding dress and you know, Brianna's stroking her hair, and they have that moment where, you know, do you think I'm a failure? You know, think I'm given, what is specifically your line?
Do you think I'm disappointing you?
Yeah, right. And that scene is just so real and sweet. And, you know, like I said, I'm a parent. So, you know, thinking the fact that your children are older and moving away. And then at the end, when she has a beautiful moment with Skye, they're walking to go live their life, and they look back at their parents, and everybody's bawling, you know. And it's you know, it. She's moving on with her life, and she's taking a risk, and she's doing. She talked about Donna, you know. She's going off with her man to see the world, you know, it's a risk. And that's what Donna did, and that's now what Sophie's doing,
And Donna has to let her go,
and she has to let her go, So these are these wonderful moments that, you know, there's a lot of those little wonderful moments that I like. But I, you know, being a dad, you know, I look at the moments between the mom and the daughter. Mm.
Powerful, powerful stuff. And it's a tremendously talented cast and a very capable and busy crew.
Absolutely.
That are making this all work. So three more weekends of Mamma Mia are coming up at the Racine Theater Guild. And if people are interested in tickets, what do they do?
You can call the box office at 262-633-4218. You can come to the box office from noon to 6 or order online, www.racinetheater.org.
And I suspect that some of these upcoming performances are already sold out.
They are. So you want to get your tickets early. Even though we do our best to have no bad seats, you know, there are a couple way in the wings, but in general, we try to give everybody a good seat, but get them early so you can sit with your friends.
Right, yes. If you are interested in seeing Mamma Mia, do not waste any more time getting your tickets. Doug Instanis is the director of this production of Mamma Mia, and Elise Sparks, a double major in music performance and theater at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, is the Sophie. Thank you both for sharing the story of Mamma Mia, and best wishes to you and all of your colleagues in the Theater Guild's production of this great musical.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
All back in hand, she leaves home in the early morning, waving goodbye with an absent-minded smile. I watch her go with a surge of that well-known sadness, and I have to sit down for a while. The feeling that I'm losing her forever, and without really entering the world. I'm glad whenever I can share her laughter, that funny little girl. Slipping through my fingers
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. And now we continue our conversation about the Racine Theater Guild's production of Mamma Mia with Mary Lee Sturino, who is the choreographer for this production. And if you know anything about the musical Mamma Mia or the group ABBA, you know that dance is going to figure very, very prominently in the proceedings, and indeed it does. And this production is a feast for the eyes as well as for the ears. And Mary Lee Sturino has been very, very busy, first of all, choreographing the show and then polishing and perfecting the performance of our 27-member cast. And she joins us for a few minutes to talk about her part in the proceedings of Mamma Mia, and especially what it's been like to come back after such a long hiatus to finally bring this production to the stage. Mary Lee Sturino, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad we can have you join us. I know you're taking a few minutes away from being a mom this afternoon with kids in the background, but it sounds like they're being nice and quiet for the next few minutes, which we appreciate. So,
yes.
First of all, I suspect that for someone who is very much involved in the performing arts, the last couple of years were so much went on hiatus was a really painful period for you.
Yes, it was. It was all just so obviously, you know, shocking. I think, you know, we all thought we were going to have to shut down for 2 weeks. And then it was, oh, maybe we'll do it in August. And then it was, oh, you know, the Delta variant and all of this. And it's just, it was a lot longer of a hiatus than I think any of us initially anticipated. You know, it just kind of adds insult to injury. But it is oh so sweet to be back. I did lots of Zoom, lots of Zoom dancing, lots of Zoom correspondence with my other part-time job. And so it just feels really good to be back in rooms with actual people.
That makes a huge difference, I'm sure. So tell us what kind of relationship you have had with the show Mamma Mia and or the music of ABBA before we even began rehearsals for this particular production.
Sure. So, I mean, I know ABBA. I knew Dancing Queen. I knew, you know, a couple of their giant big hits just because, you know, who doesn't? I mean, they're iconic. But I had not actually ever even seen a staged production of Mamma Mia until we were in between when we were supposed to do it and doing it now. So the first stage production I ever saw was at the Sunset Playhouse, and they did a marvelous job. And it was really nice to be able to just see a production. I realized quickly, you know, how different it is than the movie even. Of course, I had seen the movie with Meryl Streep. Hello, she crushed it. But I wasn't super familiar with any of their more like secondary songs, or the show in general until, you know, like I said, we were on our little break there, and then I was able to sneak away and see it. And it is just so much dang fun. The music is just like, I dare you not to dance in your seat, you know?
So tell us what the process is like when, it is time to choreograph a show, whether it's Mamma Mia or something else. And
yes.
Maybe ahead of even answering the question.
That's a good point.
Right. And even
ahead
of answering the question, maybe just rattle off real quick the other productions at the Racine Theater Guild for which you have been choreographer.
Perfect. Yes. So I started there with Joseph, and the years are all jumbled now. COVID has really made me forget what year it is. So Joseph was my first show there, and then we did Sister Act, and then we did 9 to 5. And then Mamma Mia is now, you know, taking place 2 years later. And I'm under contract to do Into the Woods and The Little Mermaid as well. So I've got a couple projects coming up in the future, which is exciting.
So when a show comes up,
so
then
yes,
what do you do?
Going back to starting the process. Okay, the first things first, you hit the nail on the head, is if I'm not very familiar with the music, because I have a degree in musical theater and I really, you know, I'm a musical person almost as much as I am, a dance person. I have to know the music and to be familiar with it too, so I can choreograph to it. So if I'm not very familiar, that's definitely first things first, is to listen to it sometimes very many times, and just to get a feel for it. I also like to read through the score. I do read music. I know some choreographers don't, and that's okay. It doesn't make them any better or worse than the other person. I just do like to be able to see the measures and counts, and sometimes the key signature changes, and then it makes a lot more sense. And then I can count out the dance breaks. So I sit down with the score, and I just kind of go through and, you know, listen. And then the director and I get together and talk about, okay, you'll do that song, I'll do this song. We'll maybe collaborate on this. And then we do the rehearsal schedule, and then we hit the ground running. And as you know, you guys tackle music first, and then we kind of jump into the dancing. So
when it comes time to figure out what you want your cast to do, I mean, when it comes right down to the nuts and bolts of choreographing a show, how much do you have to think about the ability of your performers? And of course, we're talking at the Racine Theater Guild about a community theater of a very, very high quality, but nevertheless, we're not talking about professionals. We're talking about ordinary people, many
volunteers.
Of them very, very talented, but of course, some with limited experience. How do you factor that in when it comes to actually figuring out what you want and hope your cast to do?
That's a really, really good question. So I often try to take the style of the show into account the most. You know, how much is it really movement? How much is it really dancing? What kind of dancing is it? Like in 9 to 5, we definitely had a wide array of, you know, dancing ability. And I really tried to utilize those people that had, you know, many, many years of experience. In little featured areas, and then folks that didn't feel so comfortable or didn't have as much experience, you know, were doing simpler things kind of off to the side or in the background, or they had their own little section that wasn't as difficult. So I really do try to utilize people's abilities because you're right, it is a wide array. I try my best, but it definitely, you know, it is a lot of hoping. You know, sometimes I'll choreograph something and then I'll think, oh, gosh, I hope that's not too hard. And then we'll get into rehearsal. And I've been very pleasantly surprised many times that people rose to the occasion. They work really hard there.
Hmm. So when it comes specifically to Mamma Mia and the songs of ABBA, what kind of specific style are we talking about? And what are some of the especially flashy moves that are involved in bringing a show like Mamma Mia to life?
Totally. So it's interesting. We're mixing a lot of styles in Mamma Mia, but I would say the most through line you'll see is that 70s kind of disco feel. You know, the trio of women are in these just like crazy fun, elaborate costumes, and they've got microphones, and they're always singing things in a little trio next to each other. So we tried to make that kind of interesting. But the ensemble is doing a lot of partnering, a lot of partner dancing. I would say 6 or 7 of the big numbers do something with a partner. So I tried to make sure that not one person was with one person the whole entire time, too. Hmm. Near the end of rehearsal, when we were getting down to the end of it, I would say, okay, go find a partner that hasn't been your partner yet. Ready, go.
One of the complications with this production was that it was underway with not much of a bump in the road, and then COVID kind of reared its ugly head, and a number of people, not a huge number, but a number of people involved with this production contracted COVID, including yours truly. And that was a real interruption in what otherwise would have probably been a smooth flow to opening night. So what kind of impact, if any, did that have on the whole matter of choreography and getting these splashy dance numbers really perfected and polished?
Sure. Yeah, well, there is no good time to, you know, lose, you know, cast members, key players like musical directors and directors. You know, that's never the dream. There's never a good time in the process for that to happen. But I kind of think we got a little bit lucky with the timing there, because for the most part, the material was learned. Everybody knew their lines, their music, and their blocking and their dancing. And, you know, the majority of the information was already out, but it wasn't yet tech week. So it wasn't that time where missing pieces is oh so, you know, detrimental. I think we really just lucked out in the time. So for me personally, I don't think our production was really that negatively affected, other than everybody having to just, you know, put masks back on, stay more socially distant, you know, go back to those kind of old COVID protocols and guidelines. But other than that, I think, you know, we really lucked out as far as when it happened in our process.
My sense with opening night at the curtain call was that there was a very special energy in the room. And a real feeling of gratitude in both ways. The audience so grateful to be able to see a big splashy musical like this in person, and the cast also similarly grateful. And I suspect you share many of those feelings.
Oh, goodness, yes. I actually got a little verklempt the last time I gave notes. It was just a real treat to get to work with adults again, for me personally. Professionally, I work with a lot of children, and I love kids. I really do. I work with them on purpose. I still choose to do it. But I really, really relish in working with adults, especially ones that are so dedicated, like we find at the Racine Theater Guild. So it was in particularly so such a blessing to be back there. Mm.
So do you have a especially favorite moment song from this show?
You know, Under Attack, I thought was going to be one of my least favorites. It was definitely the one I was dreading the most creatively. I was like, oh, gosh, this song is just, you know, it's, I mean, Mamma Mia is a jukebox musical. You know, the plot isn't the most thick, let's just say. And I just thought the song was a little contrived, and I was not really looking forward to it. And it actually turned out that it is my favorite song in the show. And I think that has a lot to do with the commitment that we got from the actors to just physically go there. I asked a lot of them, and they rose. So it rapidly became my favorite one, surprisingly.
Very good. Well, I want to thank you for the hand that you have had in the shaping of this wonderful production of Mamma Mia, which runs three more weekends at the Racine Theater Guild. Choreographer Mary Lee Storino, best wishes to you, and thanks for joining me today on The Morning Show.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
The Racine Theatre Guild's production of Mamma Mia, which opened last weekend, is scheduled to run for three more weekends, and a number of these upcoming performances are already sold out. If you would like to order tickets, you can call the Racine Theatre Guild box office, which opens weekdays at 12 noon. Their number is 262-633-4218, 262-633-4218. You can also find out more information about Mamma Mia and other upcoming shows, including Stephen Sondheim's Into the Woods, by going to the Racine Theatre Guild's website, which is racinetheatre.org. I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, a conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter Matt Richtel talking about his most recent book, which is called Inspired, a really fascinating look at creativity, what it is, how fundamental it is to our humanity, and how it changes the world. That's tomorrow on The Morning Show. On Saturday, replaying, I'm sorry because it is so timely, a conversation with Catherine Newman talking about her book, Rampage, an examination of mass school shootings, and examining the question of why so often they occur in small communities. Both Sunday and Monday, we'll have on the podcast interviews related to Memorial Day. On Tuesday,